So we've got third talk about American Star options. There are two parts in my talk. The first part, I will discuss some advantages and disadvantages of Monte Carlo methods of pricing American options, and in a sense, this will complement the previous two talks. I will also look at the role density function, transition density function plays in these methods, and we will concentrate on two types of methods, mesh methods and methods that use regression techniques. And conclusion of this, from this part, will be that efficient methods of estimation of transition density functions will either enhance existing methods or improve the convergence. In the second part, I will present certain framework for efficient way of approximating transition density functions. I refer to this as smooth Monte Carlo method, and it is based on dynamics defined by diffusion processes. So first, I will give a little bit motivation, and then I will describe the method for transition density functions, then for functionals of terminal values of the process, and then illustrate the general results using some examples. So I was betting that the first two talks, the first two speakers will introduce a general framework for pricing American style contracts, and I was right. So because of this, I don't have to provide much details when it comes to why this formula can be used to provide prices for American style contract. This is a way of representing a price. Expectation is with respect to the risk neutral measure, and we are taking supremum over all Markov times. Again, at this point, I don't have to explain why we discretize. Indeed, in practice, we have to do this. It's not possible to consider continuous in time option opportunities. So if the number of exercise opportunities is large, then this is good approximation for continuous time option, American option. If we have fewer time points, then we are dealing with Bermuda or Bermudan style option. Now, the framework that I will be considering is the classical dynamic programming principle based. So we will find the prices by moving backward, and at each time level we will compare the intrinsic value of the contract with continuation value of the contract. The methods that I want to describe are the ones that are based on Monte Carlo, and for complex options, in general, these are the only methods right now that can be used. So this framework is the one that I will be using, and at this point we know that the main difficulty in using this is the fact that we have to calculate the expectation surface. The expectation function here is indexed by initial points. This is at time level TI. And ideally, to be able to calculate the value function that compares the intrinsic value and the discount and continuation value, we have to know the expectation surface. So this is the main difficulty in using this method. And there have been several approaches how to calculate this expectation. The simplest one, the naive one, would be to calculate expectation at each point that we need, that we believe is important in the state space, but then this would lead to exponential growing the complexity, so simply it's not feasible. And it was only until paper by Tilley in 1993 that author convinced, by giving an example or examples, that Monte Carlo can be used to price American style contract. The problem was that by the very nature, simulation is a forward procedure. The dynamic principle is the backward procedure, and there is clash of both. So this is why it was believed that it's not possible to use Monte Carlo. Since then, many other papers have been published that illustrate that Monte Carlo indeed can be used. We'll be interested in methods. Again, this is not, I'm not attempting to present all methods, there's no time for this. Method that is general and can be applied to higher dimension is the one proposed by Barakwand and Martineau in 1995. Basically, what the authors propose is to discretize the time and discretize the state space. And this method actually approximate the transition densities over regions that come from this partitioning. Now, another method that is close to what I want to discuss is mesh method proposed by Brody and Glasemar in 1997. The main idea behind this method is that the number of points at each time level is fixed, is predetermined, and for example, if I want to evaluate expectation at time points at time, sorry, at points from the state space at time t1, I will be using all points at the next time level, and I can do this because this method is based on the assumption that transition probability density is known. If it is known, then I apply weights to all these points, and these weights are, in fact, likelihood ratios. So I will say much more about this method in a moment. For the purpose of this talk, probably it's helpful to clarify how this and other methods deal with the problem of either using directly or estimating transition distribution function. So, for example, some methods explicitly estimate transition distribution function or transition density function. Other methods, like stochastic mesh method or low discrepancy mesh method, the one that I will explain in a moment, use explicitly assumed known transition density function. And interestingly, the regression methods don't require knowledge of the transition distribution function. At this point, probably I should make clear what I mean by transition distribution function. For example, if we define the dynamic of the underlying in terms of diffusion process, we know locally the transition distribution function. For example, if we use local normal approximation, then locally the transition density function will be the one that comes from normal distribution. However, if we extend the time period, then for most diffusion processes, the transition density function will be unknown. So this is the distinction, and actually the first method here, the Barakwan and Martineau method, this method explicitly estimates transition density functions. On the other hand, methods that use regression techniques don't require transition density function over a longer time period. Still, we need to specify the dynamic of the process locally, because this is the way we specify the process. Now, I will go into detail when it comes to two methods, mesh method and regression-based methods. The idea underlying stochastic mesh method, as proposed by Brody and Glasermann, as I said before, is to generate fixed number of points at each time level and use all the points to calculate expectations. So in a sense, this is a way of building a lattice. This is simple explanation that uses only three integrals. Suppose that we are interested in approximating three integrals, so these symbols have nothing to do with the problem of pricing. What is important is that the integrand is the same. However, the density function here is indexed by initial point. So we can think about this as transition density functions. So we want to approximate three expectations, and this is explicitly shown here. These distributions correspond to transition density functions at time ti plus 1. And we can do this by using naive Monte Carlo approach, simulate observations from each distribution separately, and then approximate three integrals using three sample means. Or, so these are the three distributions here. Or we can sample from one distribution, let's call it G, and if we don't want to change the values, if we don't want to introduce bias, we have to introduce weights, and this weight here, we can recognize this as likelihood ratios. So by doing this, we are not changing the expectation. They are still unbiased, and we are sampling the points from one distribution G. Now, the problem of selecting this distribution is not a trivial one. For the stochastic mesh methods, authors provide argument in favor of a mixture distribution. So this tells us that if I want to sample points at time ti plus 1, then the distribution from which I sample, it is referred to as mesh distribution, in a sense, should be aware about the points at the previous time level. And this is why, I suppose, for example, we may use marginal distribution. A marginal distribution at time ti plus 1 will not know about points at the previous time level. However, better way of doing this, way that doesn't lead to a buildup of an error, is based on mixture of transition densities. Now, for the least discrepancy mesh method, this is a modification of the stochastic mesh method. It was proposed by Boyle and co-authors. The mesh density is different, and before I explain why it's different, let me give a very brief introduction to low discrepancy sequences. It will be really brief. Probably most of you are familiar with this idea. Very brief definition of low discrepancy sequence is a sequence that uniformly fills a given region. In most cases, this would be unit hypercube. And now, how can we measure uniformity? There are several different criteria for uniformity. The one that is often used is so-called star discrepancy. What we are doing here, we are comparing the theoretical measure with the empirical one. So suppose that you are given a sequence and we want to measure how uniformly it fills up a space. So first we select a subset of a given region. In this case we are dealing with unit hypercube. And for this subset we are comparing the empirical size of the set or the subset with the theoretical one. And then if we do this for a certain collection of subsets of a unit hypercube, then it takes supremum, we will arrive at a certain measure of uniformity. Now, there are different ways of selecting the subsets. If we take a subset, subcubes containing the origin, then we arrive at D star discrepancy. At this point, there are several possible constructions of sequences that have good uniformity properties. Only for illustration, okay, I was afraid that these points will not be visible. They are. In the first case, this is a random sample of 200 points. In the second, this is a sample from a low discrepancy sequence, which means this is a sequence which uniformly fills a space. And this is, in this case, Fourier sequence. So even just by eyeballing, we can see that in the second case, the points fill the space more uniformly. Now, why is this property important? We are looking at the problem of estimating sequence of expectations. For integration problem, the importance of low discrepancy sequence or discrepancy as a measure of how good is the sequence stems from the fact, from the result usually referred to as Cox-Mahlafka inequality. In a sense, this is a counterpart of strong law of large numbers. If we want to approximate this integral using sample mean, and in this case the sequence is not random but fully deterministic, this is low discrepancy sequence, then the integration error bound can be separated into product of two quantities. The first one is smoothness of the function, and in this, for this formulation of the error, we are using smoothness in the sense of Harden Krause, it is in terms of derivatives of function f, times the low discrepancy. So in a sense, we are separating two sources. The one, the first one, that is related to the smoothness of the function, in most cases we have no control over. However, when it comes to the second, if we choose the points in the proper way, in a suitable way, we can reduce significantly the rate of convergence. Now, as I mentioned, there are many different constructions at this point of low discrepancy sequences. What I should emphasize is that they offer higher rate of convergence than the one than the random sequences. For random sequences, we would have order of convergence from the standard deviation as 1 over square root of n. It is slow. The advantage is that it is true regardless of the dimension. Here, S represents the dimension of the problem, not exactly of the problem. Let's say the dimension of the space from which we select the points. And so, in a sense, this convergence depends, I would say, in a minor way, on the dimension, because for low values of S, this factor is not very significant. And actually, this rate of convergence can be improved if we decide to go further if we decide to combine deterministic and stochastic methods. Then we use so-called hybrid methods. For hybrid methods, this rate can be increased. The rate would be here n to minus 3 over 2. Again, what I should emphasize is that this whole approach is true for a large class of integrants. Clearly, if we decide to use quadrature methods, we can do better, but then this will be based on certain information of the function f. Here, the only information about the function f is that it is smooth in the sense that this value represents smoothness of the function is finite. And again, this is a sufficient condition. In many cases, we'll have good convergence even if the function is not very smooth. But again, we don't have much time for this. So this is the main idea behind low discrepancy sequences. And now if these sequences we try to apply to the stochastic mesh method, then a naive approach would be to apply these sequences directly to the mixture of transition densities. However, in this case, the uniformity of the sequence will be destroyed. So what we have proposed was to use different mesh density. The first one, this was our original idea, the first idea was to use distribution that remembers the previous points. This was marginal distribution with the first two moments matched with the moments of the mixture of transition densities. However, later in our simulation work, we found that if we use marginal distribution, so in this case, this is distribution that does not remember the previous point, the convergence rate will be very similar. And this actually prompted us to prove that the first density, mesh densities, will converge to the second at the rate that is typical to low discrepancy sequences. So we can approximate marginal distributions at high rate using this one or vice versa. So in our simulation work, there's not much difference between these two mesh densities. Now, I will show results of simulation studies that were quite extensive. We look at different assets, different sizes, different number of assets, different number of exercise opportunities. So here I'm presenting four classes of options. For these options, we chose 50 different values from the parameter space, and the parameter space was spanned by strike price, volatility, dividend rate, expiration, interest rate, correlation. And for this, we calculated the root mean square error. The objective was to empirically verify that the rate of convergence for methods based on low discrepancy sequences is the one that corresponds to this, to the construction of the sequences. These sequences, the way they are constructed, result in high rate of convergence when it comes to approximating a single integral. Here, this is American-style contract, so we are working with several integrals. Problem is much more complicated. And indeed, by using this method, we found that the rate of convergence is quite high. So these are graphs that come from this experiment. There are more in the paper. Let me only explain this graphs to the extent that we will know how to compare stochastic mesh method and low discrepancy. So this line with dots represent convergence rate for stochastic mesh methods. Points at each time level are generated using pseudorandom generator and mixture of transition distributions. Now, these are the values for low discrepancy points. And actually, if you look closely, here we have two lines, but they are also almost identical. One corresponds to marginal distribution. The second corresponds to marginal with matched moments. There is no difference. So if we use marginal distribution, the algorithm is very easy to implement and is very fast. Now, this is stochastic mesh method with no variance reduction techniques. If we add variance reduction techniques as suggested by the authors, actually these values will be quite close to low discrepancy values. However, we can apply exactly the same variance reduction techniques to low discrepancy methods. and this will still improve significantly the rate of convergence. This wasn't done by us, but I will give reference to the paper in a moment. So in all these cases, these prices can be obtained in real time. This method is quite fast. This is the last class is for contracts on 5 assets. Actually, we tried on 7 assets and 9 assets. But in this case, the studies were not as comprehensive as for this one. Okay. Actually, we also define bias low estimator. Clearly, these estimators are bias high. I'm not saying everything, assuming that everybody was paying attention during the previous 2 talks. So this estimator is bias high. Obviously, we can also find bias low estimator by extracting the optimal boundary and running additional simulation. However, it's also possible to obtain both bias high and bias low values in one backward run if we define another estimator in this way. Why did we decide to do this? What we are doing here is the following, and this is an extension of a method proposed by Avramidis and Hayden. It is very similar to what we do when we calculate bias up estimator. For bias up, we are comparing the intrinsic value with the continuation value. Here, this value is slightly different. First, we partition the set of all points into 2 subsets. We use one subset to calculate one continuation value and the second subset to calculate another continuation value, which means that we have 2 continuation values at each time point. And one continuation value is used to determine whether we should exercise or not. The second is used to determine the value of the contract in the case when we should continue. So the original proposal by Avramidis and Hayden was here to take just the second continuation value. However, when we applied low discrepancy sequences, we found that the convergence was not very high. This is a very obvious improvement. The second continuation value may happen to be below the first one, which is not natural. If we take maximum, then actually this rate of convergence is better. I should emphasize that straightforward application of low discrepancy sequences in many cases doesn't lead to a significant improvement. So, for example, we found that when we apply low discrepancy sequences to bias high estimators, this method, in all cases that we tested, works very well. However, for bias low, if we generate just trajectories using low discrepancy sequence, there is no significant improvement in efficiency. So we try to come up with a method that is based on moments, and this is an example of a method that is based on moments. Still, if we apply low discrepancy sequence to this one, there is improvement over random sequences, but it's not as significant as for bias high. So we never should assume that by replacing random numbers with pseudo-random numbers, we will arrive at a better way. Now, to summarize low discrepancy mesh method, they belong to the class of general methods in the sense that we don't have to know much about the payoff function, so it's flexible enough. It provides really superior rate of convergence, can be combined with variance reduction methods, and this has been done by Glasgow and Tajima, provides bias high estimates, doesn't require an explicit characterization of the exercise boundary in high dimensions, which other methods assume. Now, what are the drawbacks? It requires knowledge of the transition density function. Clearly, it is a drawback, but it is also a strength. If we know transition density function, we should consider using this method as opposed to estimating transition density function. And also cannot handle path-dependent options. However, if it can be used, then it is really fast. Now, we can modify this method to handle situations where transition density function is unknown. How do we use transition density functions in this method? First, for the mesh density, to place the points. Then to define the weights. Actually, when we experimented with low discrepancy sequences, we found that a specification of the mesh density is not very critical. So only approximation to marginal will do fine. Actually, we can go farther. In a moment, I will show example. However, when it comes to calculating the weight, we should have exact weights. If you don't have exact weights, there will be bias in the method. So intuitive extension of this method is to build a finer partition of the time axis. So if that, these are the times where we have exercise opportunities, then if I know the transition distribution or transition density from this time to this, then I can use directly the low discrepancy mesh method. If I don't have, then I can partition this time into smaller subintervals, and the length of the subintervals will allow me to use the local dynamic of the process. So it's possible, but the point here is that to extend this method, we need to have efficient estimates of transition density function. Now, let's discuss a regression-based method. Again, I'm building on the previous two talks. The first paper that I'm aware of was by Jacques Carrier in 1996, if I remember. The author proposed to use splines to estimate the expectation surface. So again, we are in the setting where we use the dynamic programming principle, which means that at each time level, we would like to approximate the expectation function. And using regression techniques, this can be done by using different methods. Carrier used splines. Using least square, we can assume that the expectation surface can be well approximated by, for example, orthogonal series. In this case, the author approximates this expectation over the whole state space. And if we define the value function at each time point in this way, we will arrive at bias high estimator. This is a simple consequence of Jensen's inequality. The difference between this and the method proposed by Longstaff and Schwartz from computational perspective was that the author suggested to use regression method only in the region where the contract is in the money. And actually, from computational perspective, this makes a big difference because the method is more stable and it's easier to fit approximation. In this case, again, we approximate the expectation function only in the region where the option is in the money. This allows us to approximate the boundary, the efficient boundary, and then if we extract the efficient boundary, we can use all trajectories to find the value for each trajectory. If we take average, this is the Bayes law. Again, this was explained in previous talks. I will not go into detail. Now, let's look at a simple experiment. This is an example with two assets. We are assuming that they follow two-dimensional geometric Brownian motion. And the option that we are pricing is a put on geometric average. It is considered a smooth function. Actually, can be calculated using other methods. And this is Bermudan-style contract. There are only four exercise opportunities. So the maturity is 1 year divided into four equally spaced intervals. Now, if I apply low discrepancy method, and I do this for different values of the strike price, denoted by K, this graph illustrates the rate of convergence. So this is the true value, the continuous line, and the dashed line represents half of the percentage of the error. And for the low discrepancy mesh method, only for 1,000 points we are already, except for this one, but otherwise it's quite nice. So the convergence is quite high. It is from above. These fluctuations, this is something, this is due probably to numerical issues. Still, we are dealing with deterministic sequence, so clearly we don't understand everything, but we are within a reasonable boundary. Now, this is for the case where the contract is out of the money, K is equal to 0.8, and again, the convergence is excellent. For 1,000 points, we are within half of the percentage of the value. In this case, actually, we didn't use the optimal mesh density, which was marginal or marginal with matched moments. We actually used uniform density. We didn't use scrambled nets. We used Fourier sequence. So by no means this was optimal way of choosing the points. Still, the convergence was very nice. Now, let's look at the regression methods. In this case, we consider two sets of explanatory variables. These are monomials. Again, much more can be said how to choose these basis points. At this point, we'll concentrate rather on the number of selected explanatory variables. So these are monomials for set A. These are of order 3, which means we have 10 explanatory variables or functions. For set B, monomials of order 4, we have 15 functions. And in the case where the option is at the money, these are the values that you are obtaining for different number of points. So in this case, we are generating certain number of trajectories. We are using points at each time level to approximate the projection. The projection is either based on 10 functions or 15 functions, and these are the results. So we are actually quite close to the theoretical one. And as you can see, the convergence is also relatively fast. There's no big difference between 10,000 points and 70,000 points. Now let's look at the case when the option is out of the money. In this case, the value of the option is twice the true value. Still, you may say this is biased high estimator. By no means we can say that this boundary is tight. So if I increase the number of explanatory variables to 15, still there is 60% error. What is disturbing is that actually it doesn't matter what is the number of points. So we don't know whether this method converges or not, because the results are very stable. Now, what is the problem? Here are the graphs that help understand the problem. The first two represent the process at different time points. So this is for 9 months, this is for 3 months. And these are the points from the process. Now, the first two represent in and out of the money regions. So the continuous line corresponds to k equal to 1, and most of the points are in the right region. The next line is k equal to 0.9 and k equal to 0.8. Now, when k is equal to 0.8, the number of points we use to approximate the projection is very limited. So actually, we are using extreme observations to approximate the projection. Clearly, this is not the right way of finding the projection. Now, this is even more visible if I use the exercise region. Exercise region is a result of finding the expectation surface and comparing with the intrinsic value. So for 3 months, near the exercise region, I have only one observation. This is based on 100,000 points. Clearly, we may say that pushing this method to be able to approximate the value of the contract when it is out of the money so significantly is too much. However, this accuracy will break gradually, and we'll not know when exactly the results are not reasonable. Clearly, the more the contract is out of the money, the fewer points we have to use, and the less accurate the result. And running more simulations will not help much, because we are not getting much points in the right region. In this case, if we wanted to approximate Bayes' low estimate, as proposed by Longstaff and Schwartz, then we are even in bigger trouble, because, for example, in this case, I have only 2 points. So there is no way I can run more simulations, but this will not help, because this method is based on extreme values. So what are the possible ways of fixing this? One way would be to tilt the process using some way of changing the measure, but this probably, and I haven't tried this, will work only for some processes. Then by introducing the likelihood, we are changing the function, then we may need a larger set of explanatory variables. So how can we fix this one? We can, for example, move the points to the region where they are relevant. So then we are close to a setting where we can optimize the position of points. The conclusion from this is, for out-of-the-money options, the accuracy deteriorates quickly. Many of the generated points are not used. They are not built in diagnostic tools that would indicate the problem. And the two main sources of error are the following. Inadequacy of the selected set of regressors. Clearly, when we have mathematical formulation, we can denote the number of regressors by symbol L without saying whether this is 10, 50, or 500. In this case, from practical perspective, it is important. If we are lucky, if we can approximate the space using few number of regressors, then the method will be fast and will be accurate. Otherwise, the results will be unpredictable and certainly not reliable. What are the possible ways of fixing this? Using methods that are capable of explaining special changes in the shape. For example, this can be wavelet-based methods. This orthogonal series are capable of doing this. Or local smoother, for example, local polynomial regression. And I will give example in a moment. Now, the second source of error is the fact that we are approximating the projection using least square method. So we are generating certain number of points and we use statistical methods. Then, if we decide to move the points, then at this point we may think what is the optimal way of moving the points. Some guidance is provided by the theory of optimal designs. Let me only mention quickly one result by Fyodorov. It is in one dimension. This result tells us that if function can be represented as a polynomial of order m, then optimal design is the one that concentrates all points at m points only. Now, the way we select these points will depend on the variance. If the variance is constant, these points will be equally distributed. If the variance is not constant, then the position of these points will depend on the variance. Clearly, we don't have this information. However, what this suggests is that probably it's better to have fewer points at which we have better estimates of the density. And now, let's look at the previous example. When k is equal to 1, let's choose only 10 points at which we approximate the density. So let's say that at each point, I have 500 points to estimate the density. We are already very close to the right result. Whether I increase this from 10, 15, 20, 20,000, the result is the same. In this case, this set of regressors does the work, and we need actually only 10 points at which we have reasonably good approximation of the distribution. Now, when we use k equal to 0.8, in this case, I found that the result depends strongly on the position of the points. Why? Because this number of regressors is not sufficient to fit the function. So this is also, if we decide to select the points, clearly this is not as easy as running simulations forward. Then we can control the complexity, the workload. At the same time, we can put the points where they should be. And this is also a way of identifying the problems early. If the function, let's say with 10 regressors, if the approximation with standard regressors doesn't work, by changing the position, we'll discover this quite quickly. Now, I fitted the local polynomial regression, and then the approximation was quite good. Local polynomial regression, the idea is, in this case, instead of fitting a function globally with several parameters, we fit function relatively simple, either linear or quadratic locally, which means we have fewer points, fewer parameters locally, the overall number of parameters can be quite large. From statistical perspective, this is very interesting method. It has many good properties, is asymptotic, actually in minimax sense, almost optimal, can adapt really to different degrees of smoothness. So this method really helps here. However, instead of 30 points, in this case, we had to use 50 points. So rather, I would use this as a way of increasing the speed of convergence because simply we don't know the shape of the function. We may guess, we may try to use the basis function with few basis functions, but then we never will know whether this is accurate result or not. So this is the conclusion for this part. For complex multi-assets American style options, accuracy and stability of regression-based pricing method is not guaranteed. This is by no means a contradiction to the previous talk. Previous talk is based on certain assumptions. For example, that the expectation function can be approximated using polynomials of given order. In practice, we don't know what is the order, so this is the problem. Okay, so we need to have some ways of efficiently estimating density function. I really don't want you to have feeling that I'm starting another talk. This is quite late. I started 5 minutes later. Okay, let's say I have 10 minutes. What I want to present is a general framework that can be used either to American style contracts or other contracts where we can efficiently estimate transition density function using Monte Carlo method. The first slide on certain motivation. Suppose that I want to find integral of this form. The naive simple approach would be to sample from the distribution F and take sample mean. Now, this sample mean can be written in this form, so it's integral with respect to the empirical distribution function. Suppose that I know that the distribution is such that density exists and is a smooth function. So can I improve the efficiency if instead of using empirical distribution function, I use certain smooth estimate of the distribution function? For example, based on an estimate of the density function. Possible estimate of the density function can be, for example, kernel estimator. If you decide to use kernel estimator, then important aspect of this method is how to choose the smoothness or the window width. This is a parameter that you have to specify, and it's actually quite critical. If I take H too small, then I have undersmoothing, and then will be large variance. If I take H too large, then I have oversmoothing, and certain details of the function will disappear. Then the variance will be lower. Now, for optimally chosen window width, the rate is of this form, n minus 4 divided by 5, which is lower than for parametric problems. Still, this is based on optimally chosen window width. Now, for this particular problem, we may choose the window width that corresponds to the problem, not that we want to estimate density. We want to estimate the integral, which means that we can minimize the mean square error. I will not go into detail, but expression for this helps us to identify the function through which the mean square error depends. So it depends mean square errors on H only through this function. And this actually helps us to draw important conclusions. In particular, if G is a linear function, there is no effect of smoothing. Doesn't matter how smooth is density function, it's not worth going into the smoothing because there is no effect on H. Now, we use density estimators locally, which means the convergence is guaranteed only if H converges to zero. If function G locally can be approximated by a linear function, then the effect will be the same, no effect of smoothing. However, for example, if I want to estimate density, then the function G is a delta Dirac function. Clearly, this is not a smooth function. Clearly, in this case, we will have smoothing will have an impact, and we know about this. And, okay, maybe I would just skip this. Conclusion from this is that in this setting, smoothing doesn't help much. It is risky because we have to choose the right window width. If we don't do this, then we may introduce significant bias. Let's try to repeat this in the context where the dynamic of the underlying follows a diffusion process. Problem is the same as before. Either estimate the transition density function or estimate functional of the terminal value. Typically, to do this, we have to discretize the process in time. Then we arrive at the Markov process, discrete in time Markov process. And the well-known approximation is, for example, the Euler scheme. Then by running simulations, in each simulation we generate a trajectory. We will have a set of values at time t, and we can use these values to approximate the functional. However, in this case, we can do this differently. Smooth Monte Carlo density estimator, this is how I call it. The idea actually is very simple. Probably I wouldn't bother you telling this. However, there are some results that can be proven that make this approach quite interesting. Instead of generating points until very end and then using, for example, kernel estimator, which has been done in many papers in finance also, in this case, we have to be careful how we choose the window width. Rather, we run simulation only at some point, let's say tm minus 1, that is not equal to the final point, and this is the difference between these two. We run simulations until this point. Over last time step, we take this average. Now, what we are using here are the transition density functions over this time period. If delta is small, this is what we know, because we assume that locally we know the dynamic of the process. So we are arriving at certain estimator of the density function. What are the properties? First, it provides legitimate density estimate, actually in the form of general weight function estimator known in statistics. So which means that values of the estimator will be non-negative, integrals will be equal to 1. So clearly we can consider this as a possible estimator. However, it has very nice property, it is unbiased. Although it is of the form well known in statistics, in this case you arrive at an unbiased estimator. Why is it so? Because we are not using any function to smooth. We are using part of the model, part that is true, is relevant, and because of this we are removing the bias. And because of this, the rate of convergence will be higher, the one that is typical rather to parametric problems, not non-parametric problems. Now, how about proving some properties? It is unbiased for any value of delta. So can we gain anything by changing the delta? The extreme cases are easy to analyze. If delta is equal to 0, then there is no smoothing. We have just empirical measure. If delta is equal to t, then the estimator is actually deterministic, and it gives us the true value. What will happen if I take delta between these two values? The proposition tells us that for any value of y, the variance of the, this is the symbol I use to denote smooth Monte Carlo estimator, is a decreasing function of delta. And for delta equal 0 is equal to 0. So it tells us that the more, the bigger piece of the model we can take, the more we reduce the variance. Now let's apply this idea to the problem of estimation of functionals of xt. 3 more minutes. Probably everybody's thinking about the lunch. 3 more minutes. Let's apply to the problem of estimating the functional. One way is to use crude Monte Carlo estimator. However, we can use the estimator of density function that I just defined and then define smooth Monte Carlo estimator of the functional in this form. So which means I am generating points not until time t, but t minus delta, and then I am using piece of the model to arrive at the estimator. The estimator is unbiased, so it shares this property with naive Monte Carlo estimator. And as before, we can find an impact of delta. Suppose that g is such that variance is finite, so I care a little bit about this. Then this is an equation that relates variance of crude Monte Carlo to the variance of smooth Monte Carlo. And this is the difference. So if I use smooth Monte Carlo, I will always reduce the variance, regardless how small is the delta. And the difference can be quantified, it is through this function. Now what is interesting is that here we have this factor 1 over n. I didn't say this, but if I try to apply smoothing in the context of simple problem, not diffusion process, then clearly the smoothing effect will disappear if I increase the number of points. This is not the case here. Regardless how many points, if I use the smoothing over last step, still I will have the same gain in efficiency. Why? Because I am using a relevant piece of the model. Now, this result actually set a stage for methods that combine Monte Carlo and numerical methods. Clearly, we can reduce the variance by increasing delta. In most cases, this can be done only numerically. I can use local information about the dynamic, for example, Euler scheme or Milstein scheme. However, if I want to use a longer time period, I have to use numerical methods. And general approach to this is based on Chapman-Kolmogorov equation. In this if I use this equation to approximate the transition density function, actually the method is not difficult to implement. If I do this over one smoothing step, then in fact I am using smooth density estimator. It is easy. If I decide to do this over several steps, then the dimensionality of this integral will increase quickly. However, I can do this in a recursive way. For example, if I generate points here, I can find density function at selected points at the next time level using the smooth Monte Carlo density estimator. And I can continue doing this until I arrive at the end. It looks like a little bit strange way of finding density function. However, some of the best known methods in finance do exactly this. So what are possible ways of approximating the transition density function? It depends on the function g. If I know the function g, I can use, for example, quadrature methods. It depends on the process. For some processes, I can use fast Fourier transforms. However, what is interesting is that binomial tree can be seen as a way of approximating the transition density. Normally, we build a tree forward, and then we discount we are moving backward. If we change the order in which we do this, actually, the tree, what exactly is doing, it approximates the transition density function. So this is another way of approximating the transition density function. Finally, we can use quasi-Monte Carlo methods. Why? Because in high dimension, for example, extension of the lattice methods is difficult. So we may use quasi-Monte Carlo methods. Again, there are certain limitations, so this is why I consider this as a smoothing to Monte Carlo. In some cases, clearly, if I want to balance the workload for the simulation and numerical methods, I will find the numerical methods will dominate simulations, clearly in low dimensions. However, once I start increasing the dimension, then by adding additional steps, the dimensionality of the numerical parts will increase very quickly. At some point, I will have to stop it. However, if I can contribute something, I can do this through estimating the transition density function. Okay, probably I should finish. The slides are available on the web site of the Field Institute. So maybe let me show only the last one. There are some numerical examples, but as I said, I don't want to keep everybody here before the lunch. So smooth Monte Carlo density estimator provides unbiased estimates of transition densities of stochastic differential equation that converge at high rate. Rate of convergence can be improved by increasing the number of smoothing steps. So if you are willing to put more work toward numerical part, we can always reduce the variance. Enables combining stochastic and non-stochastic techniques, can be used to increase efficiency. Monte Carlo simulation methods for functionals of the terminal value of the process, and the gains will depend on the function. So the slides that I skipped show how the function, how the gains depend on the process and depends on the function. The dependence is quite strong. Actually, it can be also applied to some path-dependent instruments. This can be gained either by changing the measure, for example, to the forward measure for interest rate products, or for average option. I try for average option. I managed to gain some. However, I would say from the implementation point of view, it is much more difficult because it's not quite stable for other cases. So this was a little bit pushing too far. For average option, we are adding another equation that is degenerated in the sense the diffusion part is zero. I can add small error there, small component, and this will enable to use this method. So actually, this additional error is not significant. The problem is that putting the points in the right region is more difficult. So this is why it is more challenging. Okay, that's all. Thank you.